I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. This is The Takeaway. In 1850, a Harvard professor commissioned photographs of enslaved Black people. He sought to use photography, a cutting-edge technology at the time, to gather evidence for his scientific theory. It was a theory claiming Black and white people were descended from different origins. You see, he believed the measurements and features of Black faces and bodies indicated they were not the same kind of humans that white people were. In short, this Harvard professor was collecting photographs of Black people to support the righteousness of intergenerational chattel bondage. In 2019, Tamara Lanier discovered that her ancestors were two of the enslaved Black people who were forced to submit to these photographs. The images of her ancestors, initially collected by this racist professor, were still owned and used by Harvard University. So, she asked Harvard to grant her control of the images. The university said no. In The Dark Underside of Representations of Slavery, a recent piece for The Atlantic, journalist Latreia Graham writes about Tamara's ongoing legal action against Harvard and reflects on its connection to a larger struggle for Black autonomy. She asks, are Black people ever afforded the opportunity to rest in peace?
Back in 2010, after her mother passed, she wanted to get a better picture of her genealogy. So she spoke with a couple of acquaintances and started pulling together what she knew of her ancestry. A colleague helped her find this photo of a man named Renty. She'd been told stories about Renty since she was a small child, and found this photo, and they were able to trace it back to Harvard's archives. And she found out that photos of her ancestors resided within this institution.
Okay. How is it that Harvard ended up with pictures of Tamara's basically great-great-grandma and grandpa?
There was a professor and scientist at Harvard in the 1800s. His name was Louis Agassiz. He was well known as a scientist and zoologist. And he commissioned these photos from Joseph T. Zeeley, who was a photographer that had a studio in Columbia, South Carolina, in order to try to prove some scientific theories that he was working on. And
we should probably put scientific in like air quotes if you can see
right. them. Right. We now call it pseudoscience. But at the time, he believed there was this theory, just like we have evolution, he believed in something called polygenism, which was the idea that Black people were created as a separate race from white people. And those theories and that pseudoscience became the foundation of a justification for slavery and some of the things that were eventually perpetuated to Black people.
Latreia explains the details of the inhumanity Renty, Delia, and other enslaved Black people endured during this process.
In order to prove this theory, he was taking a lot of measurements of heads and things like this. And so he had several enslaved people. He was very interested in enslaved people from Africa, right? And he had their heads measured. He had them stripped naked and had this photographer take photos from multiple sides of their bodies in order to sort of describe them differently from white people like him.
And perhaps even worse is what happened after the images were created.
They go into a drawer after that. And someone rediscovers them again about 50 years ago. And then they start grappling with what these photos mean, what to do with these photos. And they go into the archives where you have to sign documents in order to look at them.
The defiance and non-consent in the faces of these enslaved people is clearly visible. Returning their images to a direct descendant seems like at least one way to set right this wrong that was committed. But Harvard has declined to do so.
there's a certain amount of prestige to these photos that I don't think that we can ignore. These are some of the first images of enslaved people that we know of, right, that exist. And Harvard, being a school that has cachet, I went to an Ivy, I understand prestige and cachet. That means something to them. And there is a great reluctance to let them go. Also, perhaps because they believe that they can store them better than other institutions and things like that. But that's not what happened. Harvard says, you know, in some ways that these photos reside in our collection. You don't have any right or any interest to these photos. And thus, she decided to put together a lawsuit, hoping to have some agency over the photos. And I think it's important to note, it's not like she wants to take these photos of Rinty and Delia home and sit them on the mantle, right? She wants them to go to another institution, preferably in my conversation with her, a Black institution that she believes can be a better steward of this legacy and history and find a way of separating it from the white supremacy that is the foundation of some of these institutions like Harvard.
I asked Latreia whether or not Harvard University is profiting from the licensing of these images.
In her lawsuit, Lanier alleges that they are profiting off of the visages of Rinty and Delia, and that in some ways, because their images are trotted out to be put on the front of conference pamphlets and they are put on the front of books, that these her ancestors are still working. And so we don't know if the press, Harvard declined to comment on some of the questions that I asked about the policy around licensing and the photos pre-2010 when this case starts to ramp up and come to light. So we don't have an answer about whether or not they were profiting off of these photos. But there is, again, this prestige and cachet conversation that we have about them having these photos.
I get the sense that this case for Tamara Lanier is about more than money.
When I spoke to her, the conversation in many ways was about reparations and finding a way to make peace with a terrible thing, a predatory thing that had happened to her family. Because if it was simply about dollars and cents, there were ways that this could have been handled. It seems to be mostly about actual control over the images.
Control, autonomy, those are interesting concepts when you look at what's been taken from Black people without consent in the United States. Just take the case of Henrietta Lacks. She's a Black woman who scientists took cells from her body. And those cells over the years have led to major medical breakthroughs. But none of the profits from those achievements have come back to her descendants or even to her broader geographic and racial community. It all made me wonder whether Latreia was surprised by Tamara Lanier's story.
This is just one case in a series of examples of times that Black people have been exploited and that attributes or assets that they had are still working for a larger, mostly white-centric community. So there are a couple of things, a couple of different examples like that, and this is just one case.
If the Black body is constantly doing work well past death, how does it ever rest? Especially in an age of digital anxiety, when so many things like images are very easily manipulated.
It's a little horrifying to think about, right? There's a lot of digital anxiety, at least on my part, in thinking about this, because it's not too far to think about the Whitney Houston hologram that's going to start performing, the Tupac hologram. People were really freaked out about the Anthony Bourdain voice technology is moving so much faster than we can. And we're already seeing instances of this in some ways with my heritage's deep nostalgia technology, where you're able to take photos of people and make them move, right? Whether it's from side their eyes move from side to side, or you feel like you have some connection. There is technology is being used as a tool to try to keep people around in some ways, or forge some sort of emotional connection through movement, through performance, things like that. And right now, there's no legislation or anything that really gives the Black body rest. It's horrifying to think of as a creative in some ways. The only thing that I can hope is that I leave behind enough portraits and enough audio and video that maybe people don't try to resurrect me in some ways, or that I'm not being called on to perform or become an emblem for a movement or a moment beyond the one that I'm living in.
Creation should be a joyful process. What we make in this world should live beyond ourselves. But this is difficult to accomplish when there isn't consent to create or a willingness to leave these things to the world.
In this piece, I talk about Renty and Delia and their lack of consent. And on the other hand, I talk about Sojourner Truth and Frederick Douglass and how they use their images as formerly enslaved people that then emancipate themselves in order to move things forward. And the difference there is very much is consent, right? It is they are choosing how they want to be seen. Sojourner Truth used to sell small portraits of her in order to fund some of her abolition lectures and her tours. And that is a decision that she made. Whereas someone that has decided to create a portrait or a painting of someone that was a victim of police brutality and then sell it and keep the money or gain notoriety and fame. Like nothing is going back to that family or those descendants. Nothing is changing for the immediate family members of these people, the folks that are the closest to the trauma and the terror in many cases.
For me, I actually think some public figures are larger than the control of just their genetic family and descendants. Many of us feel like we have a stake in the legacies of our larger ancestors, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King Jr., Frederick Douglass. I asked Latreia about Harvard's argument for keeping these images and whether it's centered around this story of going beyond genetic descendants.
They have allowed historians to start talking about what they believe the lives of Renty and Delia. And again, these are only two of a number of enslaved people that were photographed by Zeeley. It's just that this particular descendant has come forward. So in some ways it does open up a Pandora's box. You know, if this descendant, claims the rights or believes they have a right to these photographs, right? What if the descendants for these other photographs come forward, right? And in some ways, possibly depletes a collection. But again, they may see themselves as a steward or trying to make recompense in their own way. I know that Harvard is doing some of that soul searching that the rest of America is doing. And I think it will take time. It will take a number of years for all of this to be untangled.
Pandora gets a bad rap. Sometimes you got to open up the messy stuff in order to get to the truth. And I feel like in so many ways, that is what your piece did. Journalist Latreia Graham, thank you for joining us and bringing us some hard questions.
Yeah, thank you. Those questions were hard for me too.